Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Thanks for tuning into our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and I was born and raised in polygamy, and the subject and the focus that we have on our show tonight is the practice of polygamy. We want you to know that polygamy never was part of God's salvation plan. It wasn't part of His plan during the days of Abraham and Jacob. It wasn't part of His plan during the days of David and Solomon. It wasn't part of His plan during the days of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, and it isn't part of His salvation plan today. This is a live telephone call-in program. You might want to make note of our telephone number. It's 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. For questions and comments that you would like to make off the air, you can email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and we would love to hear from you either by phone or by email. We are happy to announce tonight that we are now on DirecTV, and so we welcome all of our new DirecTV viewers, and we want to thank everyone who wrote in or called in and asked DirecTV to put us on their channel lineup. And it's nice to have that availability, and we would ask that you would tell friends and relatives or anyone else who has DirecTV that they can watch our show now on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. All of our previous programs can be watched on the website, whatloveisthis.tv. All of our shows are up there on streaming video, so you can go there and pick up any show that you might have missed. Our monthly discussion group is, we still meet every month, and we met again last Monday night. Again, we had a very good group, a very good discussion time. We would like to invite folks who are thinking of coming and haven't yet to just kind of make the move and come to sit in on one or two of the groups and discussions and see what you can get out of it. It's for people who are in or have been in a polygamy group. Just email us for the information, the details of the group meetings, and you can do that at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. And you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, for information about what we do to help those who are caught up in polygamy situations. Now, we know that there's people who are happy where they're at, and that's just fine. But if you're being forced into something you don't want to do, perhaps you feel like that you're trapped in polygamy, or there's some difficulty you need to talk to someone, please feel free to give us a call. You can find our contact information on that webpage, and you might want to jot down our toll-free number. It's 877-425-9993. You know, sometimes I'd like to bring on people who could give testimony, live testimonies of how we've been able to help them as they struggle with the issue of polygamy, either getting out or some of the issues after they get out. But, you know, we can't bring those kinds of people or those kinds of testimonies live on the show because, unfortunately, the polygamy group seem to say vengeance belongs to us. Now, do these groups really harass or threaten or intimidate those who want to leave polygamy groups or even those who want to help them leave? Yes, they certainly do. They will do everything that they can to intimidate and frighten people to make it as hard and as difficult as possible for them to leave their polygamy group. They systematically deny to their members their basic freedoms of choice as an American citizen, as well as their so-called promised free agency. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about one of our viewers who had called me privately and had mentioned that the LDS Church had banned and prohibited their members from watching Channel 20. We tried to find out more information about that, and we haven't received anything official yet. But I have heard from various sources that indeed the prohibition is in place, and not in just one ward. There's been several people in different areas who have said that this is the case. Like I said, we haven't heard from the bully pulpit or the guys downtown of the Mormon Church, but I would like to ask a question. Did you know that free agency does not practice information control? it just doesn't happen. We'd like to know what they're afraid of, or what they're ashamed of, or what they're nervous or anxious about that they would ban you from watching Channel 20. Jesus told us that we are to be as wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. He knew that we need to know what's going on around us, and that includes the Mormon church members as well. Secrecy in religion is wrong. It prevailed in the days of Joseph Smith and into the latter-day Mormon culture, and also into the Mormon fundamentalists, where secrecy just is part of the religion, it seems. And it's on both sides of Mormonism, and it isn't the right thing to do. There are two sides of Mormonism, in case you didn't know. There's the mainline Mormon church side and the Mormon fundamentalist side. And the mainline church claims that there is no such thing as Mormon fundamentalism. And yet the fundamentalists are living exactly as the first Mormon taught them, who was Joseph Smith, just as he taught them to live. We also know that if Joseph Smith tried to join the Mormon church today, he would be soundly rejected. And yet every single one of the Mormon fundamentalist groups would accept him with open arms. Now, I hope that the fundamentalists don't consider that this is a confirmation that they are living within the will of God, because that isn't true either. The Bible soundly opposes all the doctrines that Joseph Smith introduced into Mormonism, and that includes polygamy. I would like to read portions from some emails that I have received as we launch into the subject matter of our show tonight. And these are just portions, they're not the entire email. And it seems to talk about, people seem to be confused about the Mormon versus the fundamentalist doctrines. Is there common ground between the two? One email said, I would hope that you would be more tolerant, more educated than to lump the LDS faith in with the fundamentalists. The fundamentalists have nothing to do with us, and yet you take little shots on your program to make people think it is the same. I will expect you to make it clear in your program that the LDS faith is not the same as the polygamous fundamentalists. I guess you really do not have a grasp on our doctrine. The next one says, tonight I felt the need to bring something to your attention. Do you realize when you talk about the polygamous groups and the mainstream Mormon church, you kind of lump their doctrine together as they teach the same things? I don't know if you're aware, but we believe quite differently than you lead your viewers to believe. And then the next one says, if Joseph Smith had not taken 14-year-old girls as secret wives, there would not be polygamy today. The association is absolute. Every 14-year-old girl today who is given to a middle-aged church leader in the polygamy group is because Joseph took 14-year-old wives. You cannot disassociate them. Now, these are only samplings of some of the emails and telephone calls that we receive accusing us of combining or confusing contemporary LDS doctrine with the Mormon fundamental beliefs. And so we realized, that it was time to devote an entire program to comparing the polygamous and the Mormon mainline Mormon church doctrines to discover if they share common ground. Because of his expertise in early Mormon and present-day Mormon doctrine, we've asked Bill McKeever to come on the show and help us out tonight as we discuss these doctrines. Bill has been on our show a couple of times before. He's the author of several books, and his latest book is entitled, In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations. This book is absolutely the best source. It's absolutely a priceless resource for anyone who is studying early Mormon doctrine, early Mormon church history, and what some of the leaders and some of their publications have said. And so if you're doing any of this, you would be very well blessed to get this book. He's the founder and the director of Mormon Research Ministry, and you can get his book on his own webpage, which is mrm.org, or you could also probably order his book on utlm.org as well.
They have it at the bookstore, yes.
Okay, well, welcome to our show again, Bill.
Thank you, Doris. Good to be back with you.
Well, we always enjoy having you here, and we always have a good time discussing these little doctrines here. We're accused of blurring the lines between Mormonism and Mormon fundamentalists. I'm sure you probably get accused of that too, and you basically deal with some of the same information.
Sometimes. I don't deal so much with the fundamentalists as you do, but certainly we get a lot of fan mail, if you will, regarding the research that we do put out. And one of the biggest responses, or the most often response that I use, is, why are you so upset at me when I'm merely quoting what your own leaders have
said?
That's all I'm doing. Most of our website is nothing but quotations from their own stuff. And in fact, even the book that you just mentioned, it's all their own material.
It's every bit of it. Yeah, it is. So. Well, you know, it's a lot of the emails, like what I've just read and people that I've spoken with, I firmly believe by now that the mainline Mormon church member does not know what their church originally taught or what their basic foundational beliefs are. And I don't believe they know what the polygamists believe either.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think a lot of modern Latter-day Saints aren't even aware of some of the modern teachings of Mormonism and what is doctrine. Even the definition of doctrine in the Mormon church has been so clouded lately. I mean, is it really just the standard works? Is it the standard works plus the teachings of the living prophet? Can we trust anything that the prophet previous had to say? There's a lot of confusion even among Latter-day Saints. And it's funny, when you get out on the streets and you talk with Mormons, you find that there is a lot of folklore out there. I mean, there's a lot of time I'll have people bring up something and I'll go, where do you get that? Well, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is according to your own church, you don't have the priesthood authority to give those kind of opinions. You're supposed to be subject to the priesthood authority above you, which is usually the prophet and the apostles, the first presidency and such. So you really don't have the authority to do that.
No, and they do. They rely upon that and what someone else said as well. Well, we do invite our LDS viewers and also our polygamous viewers tonight to call in and weigh in on some of these doctrines as we talk about them. However, excuse me, when you call in, you might consider using an alias, because if the LDS Church has truly banned the program, and I know the polygamy groups have, you might get in trouble for exercising your free agency by calling in the program, but we'd still love to hear from you. So, Bill, let's talk about the common doctrines between the LDS Church and the Mormon fundamentalists. It might surprise a lot of people as they watch this. I think the first one that we can talk about is actually, it's not a doctrine, but I thought I'd throw it in anyway because of the times that we're talking, and that's information control. They both really do everything they can to control what their people know and what they want them to know.
It's certainly been much more difficult for the Latter-day Saint Church, the LDS Church in Salt Lake City, to control that in recent years, especially with the internet. We've noticed that the internet has kind of changed everything. Whereas when I first began MRM back in 1979, we used to get a lot of requests for information from people living in Utah, and they would request purposely that we would not put our ministry name on the outside of the envelope because they had a Mormon postmaster or a Mormon mailman, and so they didn't want the information getting out that they were actually checking out some of these things. That all changed in the mid-1990s. We personally, MRM, went on the web back in late 1995, and that just changed our whole ministry as far as how many people that we're reaching, how we're reaching them, the ability to be able to communicate with them. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of difference between having to mail something hard copy to someone now, where is there a possibility of someone knowing about this and a person being able to look at some of this stuff in the privacy of their own home. It's changed everything. Yeah. So for all the bad that the internet does have, there's a lot of good that it has as well, and we have certainly seen that in our ministry and what we're doing.
Yeah, so it's awesome. And you said that about people who were afraid of what you would mail to them. I've had people call me and ask me to be careful in sending out our newsletter to them because they are afraid their postman is in a polygamy group, or at least pro-polygamy, and that there might be some kind of reciprocation from that. Yeah. So the fear is there.
I think on that subject, though, there would be because Mormon apologists argue that obviously the information can't be all that secret because all the anti-groups seem to have the information. Yeah. And I hate that term anti. I just threw it in there because that resonates with a lot of these apologists. Mm-hmm. And that's true to a certain extent, that it's not so secret, at least with the LDS Church, that it's impossible to find out some of these things, because you certainly can find them. I mean, the Mormon Church and Mormon individuals have done people like myself a great favor through such tools as the LDS Library that comes on CD, where you have thousands of Mormon books. Mm-hmm. They've done us an immense favor with this. I mean, instead of now having to read through all these books as I used to do years ago, now I can go right to the source, read the context, make sure that I'm getting a proper application of that particular quote, and then go on and find another one mm-hmm. quite quickly. And so the information's out there, it's just that you have to know where to look. Right. And a lot of Latter-day Saints don't know where to look. They don't know what subjects to look up sometimes, right. and they wouldn't know where to go even if they did. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the LDS library and archives. I haven't been in the new one since they moved it, but it's a fascinating time to go in there. I spent hours in there just going, scouring all these things, getting on the computer, looking up all these things. In fact, every quote that we put in their own words, every one of them was hand-verified for the reference.
Wow,
we did not put it in there if we did not see a hard copy from the actual source. Hopefully, we're going to go with 99.9% pure on that one. So could be mistakes, there probably are, and I think we found a few glitches, but nonetheless, it's not a bad reference.
But the Mormon Church has still, I understand from various sources that they have banned their members from going on the internet to any anti-Mormon sites.
Yeah, I've seen some vague threats, like in General Conference, where they tell members to be very careful what they look at on the web. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any real official decrees yet that have to do with that. It would almost be to their detriment to do that, because I know with a lot of the people that are really struggling with some of these issues, and there certainly are a lot of Latter-day Saints that do struggle with a lot of these issues, to say that they're not allowed now to go check them out is just going to encourage, I think, a lot of them to go out there more.
I do hope so. I do, because they need to check it out. Well, okay, well, the first doctrine that we wanted to bring up that the LDS Church and the Mormon Fundamentalists share is that the LDS Church and the Fundamentalists, although they differ as to when they officially began, because they all began in different times, all of them claim and trace their roots back to Joseph Smith. Mm-hmm. Joseph Smith is the prophet of God. He is the prophet of the Restoration, and he brings continuing
Yeah, there's
Revelation.
There's no denying this. At least some of the fundamentalists that I have talked to all point back to
they
Joseph
do.
Smith.
All the fundamentalists believe this.
And unlike, let's say, the Community of Christ, or the formerly known as the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they certainly have not backed off of that. Now, the Community of Christ has been taking kind of a different stand on this in recent years. They actually have on their website that they don't think it's actually a positive thing to still maintain that they are the only true church, and that their church actually resembles what the early Christian church looked like anciently. In fact, they say that you can't find in history what the RLDS, or the Community of Christ, actually believed, or the way they practiced. I would say it's the same way when it comes to the LDS church as well, but the LDS church certainly does hold that position, that they are the only true church on the face of the earth. All other churches are in a state of apostasy. They've never backed off of 1 Nephi 14:10. That talks about there's only two churches. One is the Church of the Lamb of God, and the other is the Church of the Devil. They still hold to that position. So really what you have is you have these two main groups, two groups, let's say, that are kind of budding testimonies here, B-U-T-T-I-N-G, not budding with a D. And so we're at kind of like a testimony stalemate. Now, having talked with quite a few fundamentalists, especially those of the Harmston group down in Manti, I'll tell you, within the context of Mormonism, the fundamentalists seem to be more spot on than the LDS.
The LDS
have certainly gotten away from some of these things, although they do maintain Joseph Smith, of course, and some of the basics that we're going to be talking about tonight. They haven't backed off of those, but they certainly do not believe like the early Mormons did. If you were to take a snapshot of early Mormonism in the 19th century, mid-19th century and you look at the fundamentalists today, they would probably more closely mm-hmm. resemble the way mm-hmm. it used to look. Mm-hmm. And the Mormon Church has gotten away from that.
Yeah,
There's no doubt about that.
They definitely do. And I don't believe that the Mormon, mainline Mormon church member realizes that the polygamy, those in the polygamy groups do believe so closely to what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think they realize that at all.
Well, see, what's interesting about that is because I did an article recently on this very subject and showing with which group are the Mormons more closely associated, because the Mormon Church would love to be more closely associated with mainline Christianity.
Right.
They want to join in with evangelicals, even though they despise our witnessing tactics and our tenacity sometimes, but they still want to be recognized more as a Main Street type of group. In fact, that's actually what Mike Wallace said when he interviewed Gordon B. Hinckley, that they don't want to be known more as mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when you compare what they actually believe with evangelical Christianity on just some of the basics, the Mormon Church certainly is more in line with the fundamentalist groups on some of these basic teachings. The one thing that, of course, that they don't like is the polygamy issue, even though you have three apostles right now that are practicing a spiritual type of celestial polygamy right now. It's not that they've gotten away from it completely, that it's still part of their doctrine, just not in this mortality.
Right.
But what's interesting is how Hinckley made it very clear that in conference one time, I think it was back in 98, he said that the phrase Mormon fundamentalist is a contradiction. You're not supposed to use those two words together, he said.
Yeah.
And he was very adamant about that because the fundamentalists have caused the LDS Church quite a bit of embarrassment because people who are ignorant of what Mormon history is all about and what these groups actually teach can easily lump them together. We saw that during the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
They were certainly being accused of that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, it's not really us that are doing that.
No,
we're making
not.
The
it's
distinction.
It's themselves.
It's them and more the general public that is not really familiar with a lot of these teachings and don't delve into it as much as we do. But the thing is that I find ironic is Gordon Hinckley didn't want the words Mormon fundamentalist put together, but yet they don't mind the problem of having Mormon Christian put together. And they wonder why we get upset.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's Gordon Hinckley getting upset mm-hmm. when they're being lumped in with another group, and
right.
yet they wonder why we get a little bit antsy when they want to take the name of Christian for themselves,
mm-hmm.
when we insist they don't believe like Christians have traditionally
right.
believed on some of these
in
issues.
In fact, they believe closer to the Mormon fundamentalists than they do to the Christians.
Exactly. That's the irony of the whole thing.
Oh,
yeah, right?
Yeah. Okay, the next thing that the doctrine that they have in common is that they all teach their members that Joseph Smith saw God the Father and Jesus Christ
mm-hmm.
and was told that all churches were wrong and that all their creeds were an abomination. We touched on this already mm-hmm. Briefly on the creeds. I don't believe the Mormons realize they throw this word creeds out as if it was a dirty word, and yet they have their own creed.
Yeah,
why do they get
probably
a creed, not
the rest of us? Not in such an official capacity, but they certainly, a creed is a belief. It's a belief, and the creeds, as they were written down, were made to explain some of the teachings that the Christian Church held to. It wasn't inventing new teachings,
mm-hmm.
and of course the creeds were supposed to be supported by biblical doctrine, and that's exactly what they do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The creeds that we would accept, definitely, Athanasian mm-hmm. Creed and things like that.
Right.
But I know they do tend to look at the word creed as some kind of a bad word, and it's really not. It's really not. It's just basically a belief.
Well, I believe any religious group will have a set of what they believe, and that's just their creed. That's that simple. Now, on the one on the Joseph Smith seeing God and Jesus Christ, I'd just like to make mention here that now the polygamists believe that, and the Mormons believe that. Yet,
and we don't.
And we don't, because we know what the Bible says, that God cannot be seen. He absolutely is invisible, and no one has seen or can see God. And if God is ever revealed, he's revealed through the medium of Jesus Christ. So if Joseph saw anyone, it would have been one person, and it would have been Jesus only.
Well, if a Mormon would just go back and look at the Joseph Smith translation and look at Exodus 33:20, they'll see that Joseph Smith added bunch of words to that passage, where basically in most of our Bible versions, it just basically says, no man can see God's face and live. Mm-hmm. Joseph Smith goes on and adds all these things, that no sinful man will see my face, no sinful man will ever see my face. And it's interesting because during this time when Joseph Smith allegedly saw God the Father's face, it was during a time when, in his own testimony, he was talking about all his young foibles as, you know, being involved in things that he shouldn't have been doing, and basically actively participating in his sinful nature.
So you
have his own Bible version is a problem on that issue.
Yeah, and most of their writings do throw everything out that they themselves say. The fourth doctrine that they share is that the LDS Church and the fundamentalists teach that an angel named Moroni directed Smith to the gold plates that contained the Book of Mormon. The fundamentalists believe that just as strongly as the Mormons do.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in the golden plates, they believe in the Hill Cumorah, believe in Moroni, they believe the whole story.
Most Mormons I know certainly do believe in the gold plates. They don't, when you ask Latter-day Saints, as I have asked hundreds of Latter-day Saints just in the past few weeks when we were down in Manti, I asked them, do you believe Joseph Smith had gold plates? It was like about 100%
yeah.
This last time. It wasn't even 99.5. It was 100%. All of them believed that Joseph Smith actually had gold plates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how he carried them is a whole other issue, and that's one of the things that I'm doing down there with my gold plates,
yeah.
and is getting them to see just how heavy they would have been had they been actually made of gold.
That would be a good answer when you get that, if you can.
Yeah.
I've heard some of them, even in the fundamentalist groups, say that you can't disprove the Book of Mormon, so therefore Mormonism is true. Therefore the Mormon is true, because you can't disprove it.
Well, you can certainly do, and this is what I do. When I get a lot of high school and college age kids will come up to me, and I'm sitting there with my little gold plates that are actually 10-pound barbell weights with a pipe handle with a T that they can lift it up just to see how heavy 100 pounds is. And I explained to them that if they were actually made of gold, they would have weighed twice this amount.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a hard enough time lifting the 100 pounds. You can imagine how difficult it would be lifting 200 pounds and tucking it under your arm and carrying it for a distance of 3 miles.
Yeah.
The thing is I first asked that question, do you believe Joseph Smith had gold plates? And they all say yes. They don't say, well, most of them don't. At least I have had in the past. Some will say, well, no, they weren't really gold. They were made of tumbaga, you know, which is a copper alloy. And, I can take that argument, too, because I can disassemble my gold plates down to even the ridiculous weight of only 40 pounds, which is what some Mormon apologists are now trying to say, that plates only weighed 40 pounds. Well, even at 40 pounds, the story is ridiculous. And what I tell the kids and the college-age students and even some of the parents that are standing around, I says, what we're doing is we are taking Joseph Smith's story and we are actually doing a little science experiment here. And I ask him, do you know the definition of science? And they look at me like, is this a trick question? And it's not. I says, basically science is what? Observable and repeatable, correct?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
They'll say, yeah. I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the story, as you have all been told, you know, in your Sunday school classes and such, and we're going to try and recreate it. And when we try to recreate the story and go by what it actually says, we find that we run into some difficulties with this whole story. That the gold plate story just doesn't make a lot of sense. First of all, did the three witnesses really see the gold plates? Every Mormon that I talk to believes that they did.
But if
you read Volume 1, page 52, I think it is, in the Documentary History of the Church, which is History of the Church, it says very clearly that they saw them only in vision.
By faith.
And I asked them, I says, if I was to be walking by at that particular time when the witnesses were supposedly looking at the gold plates, would I have been able to see them? And they have to stop and think about that. And some of them say, well, probably not. And I say, why wouldn't I be able to see something that's tangible? Why would I need to pray about something
yeah,
that's tangible?
Yeah,
that makes no sense. Obviously, I should be able to see the plates. Otherwise, why did Joseph Smith carry them around covered up? It seems very simple that if he had taken the covering off of there, I would have been able to see them. But yet we don't find that same kind of description when it comes to the three witnesses, because they actually had to see this in vision.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Harris didn't see the plates at that same time. He was over a considerable distance away when he supposedly saw them. Smith didn't take the plates from the room where he was translating them out to the woods where they supposedly saw the angel flipping the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't take the plates from where the two witnesses along with Joseph Smith saw the plates over to where Martin Harris happened to be standing. What's he doing with these things?
Yeah.
And,
good
questions. And that's problematic.
Good questions. And I believe that even the mainline polygamist group member probably is less informed than the mainline Mormon church member on some of these issues.
They read the story and they merely accept the story as fact because the story is coming through basically through the mouth of Joseph Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And as
mm-hmm.
long as Joseph Smith said it, as far as they're concerned, it's credible.
Yeah.
There's no need to really examine this. And this is what's so important about what we do is we want them to really look at the stories and examine these stories at face value and see, can you
right.
really recreate that?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't. Not in that issue.
Bill, we've got phone calls coming in already. Look at that.
Great.
Let's take some calls here. Line one, we have David from Ogden. Hello, David.
Hey, hey, Doris and Mr. McHugh, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I communicate with both of you guys via email over time. And I go to the MRM the website all the time.
Oh, thank you.
I want to mention a couple things. First off, I don't like the fact that Bill used the word the prophet. And when you mentioned I just say the president, because the prophet kind of gives it legitimacy. That's the way I look at it. But that's not the main reason I called. I just want to throw this other one out here to you. And I want you to research this, Bill, because you're very good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize that right now, I work in the medical profession, and that the University of Utah, but also many universities across the country, and you can find this on, if you do a Google search, you can find this information. They're starting to find that the reason, maybe studies, I guess when they say they speculate that maybe Utah's autism rate is so high, it's due to the polygamous family relationships amongst the early settlers. And that's, I mean, they're really doing some serious studies, even at the U of U, which is, well, but there's more than one David, and that may not be my real name. So, so statistically, you know, there's a higher prevalence of autism within Utah. So what I'm saying is I would like for you to look into that, because it's not just here in Utah, but major universities across the country are showing. So this would be a good reason for the ones that still are practicing polygamy. They're seeing a connection between the two. And I'll just leave it at that. And Mr. McKeever, I would really like you to look into that, because... And I'll keep looking.
I'm not aware of any connection along that. I will address your first statement regarding using the word prophet.
Let it go up the line, okay?
Okay. And you're right. I don't want to imply at all that I believe that he's that Thomas Monson is a true prophet or Gordon B. Hinckley was a true prophet. I certainly do believe that they are prophets, but they would be false prophets. I made that very clear when Hinckley passed away.
I guess he didn't want to hear your answer on the air.
Yeah, he said take it off the air. So,
yeah.
I was a little bit disturbed when I saw a lot of Christians really praising Gordon Hinckley after he died. And I'm not one to speak disparagingly right after a person has died or anything like that. But I felt very uncomfortable that many Christian leaders were actually speaking of Gordon Hinckley as this great man. And coming from my angle, this is a man that has led millions of people astray. About half of the people mm-hmm. that now belong in the Mormon church have only been in it during the administration of Gordon Hinckley. That's how much the church has grown in these recent years. And when you think that there's over 13 million people in the Mormon church, and about half of those only knew Gordon B. Hinckley as a quote-unquote prophet,
mm-hmm.
that was troubling to me. And because I can't imagine the Apostle Paul giving Gordon B. Hinckley, or even Thomas L. Monson, if he continues to go the way he's going, a positive eulogy at his funeral. I just can't imagine that. So that's kind of coming from where
Paul warned us himself of those who were deceived and those who were the deceivers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have going here with the polygamist church as well as the Mormon church. The prophets, the people in the high offices are the ones who were deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they are. They know they're deceiving.
Yeah, definitely the leadership has to know a lot more than the lay membership when it comes
Absolutely.
To some of these issues. I would love to hear what their private discussions are like.
Oh, I would too. I'd like to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Kyle from Brigham City. Hello, Kyle. Kyle?
Hi.
Yes, you're on the air, Kyle.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question, obviously. Brigham Young said some embarrassing and outright racist statements, all the while claiming to be speaking under the authority of God. And he was quite clear about that. Journal of Discourses has a lot of what he says. And mainline LDS members today tend to downplay him, like, oh, that was back then. We don't believe that now. But any attempt to contradict Bahnsen is greeted with incredulous outrage. The only difference in substance, according to them, between the two men is Brigham Young is dead. So how do they, what's the logical way to get around the inconsistency?
A logical way?
What do they claim is logical?
Well, here's the thing, when it comes to the black issue, and this is another parallel between the fundamentalist groups and the LDS Church.
Sure
now,
is.
The LDS Church did change its view in 1978. They call it now a policy change. It wasn't really a doctrinal change, which makes me laugh, because you don't need a revelation to change policy. Okay,
right, the blacks are still, according to their teachings, inferior. It's just that we're giving them a break.
Well, I don't know if they would say inferior. I would say that they would probably not be considered inferior since 1979 because of the ability to procure the priesthood for themselves, which is something that is very important for them in order to reach exaltation. But still, when you were telling people that this was not a doctrine, when it actually affected thousands of members of your own church, it had to be much more than just a personal opinion of Brigham Young or some of the other leaders down there. I think that the Mormon Church, during the 30th anniversary, for instance, of the priesthood revelation, as they call it, did themselves another disservice by trying to downplay its significance prior to 1978, because it only shows once again that they were obfuscating the facts. When you go back and you look at the teachings of Brigham Young, John Taylor, for instance, twice teaching that the reason that we had blacks on the earth is because the devil needed a representative. Or you mentioned the Journal of Discourses with Brigham Young, volume 10, page 110. If a white man of the chosen seed mixes his blood with the seed of Cain, the penalty under the law of God is death on the spot. This will always be so. That's a part that a lot of people forget.
Mm-hmm.
This will always be so. Brigham Young, other leaders like David O. McKay, even more currently, all believe that, yes, blacks were going to get the priesthood at some point in time, but it wouldn't be until after the resurrection. So when you read Declaration 2, you're going to see where it mentions how we know that God was going to change this. But even that's misleading because, yeah, there's no doubt Mormon leaders said it was going to change, but it wasn't going to change during this mortality. And many Mormon leaders made that very clear. So even Declaration 2, which is in their own scripture, is misleading, and it's not telling the truth. And see, when the Mormon Church comes out and they make these kind of comments to downplay their own history, they do themselves a disservice, and they do their membership a disservice, because a member of this church is going to be looked upon as being just as much a liar as the leadership. And so they need to back off and just admit these things and say, yeah, we did say some of these things, and we probably shouldn't have. But I doubt if that's going to happen, Doris, because once the leadership admits they've made mistakes as big as that, then the dominoes start to fall
when
it comes to every other teaching. Well, if you were so wrong on this teaching, what about that teaching? And then all you have is LDS apostles being nothing more, or LDS prophets and apostles being nothing more than latter-day commentators. And that's what they don't want. Because
right,
then they fall in the category of the rest of us as a part of apostate Christianity. You know, who's to say they're telling the truth?
If you can hold Brigham Young statements as true or false, depending on a higher standard, why can't we do that with Monson or Hinckley, for that matter?
Yeah, they will argue, as you said, they'll argue, well, you know, Monson is the living prophet and Brigham Young is the dead prophet. But
and the living prophet trumps anything.
But it overlooks the fact that Brigham Young was a living prophet when he said these things.
Yeah.
I mean, he was believed by members at that time as telling the truth. And yet we have the modern Mormon leadership trying to tell us that God will not allow the leadership to lead the church astray. That is silly. It is just nonsense. And my prayer is that the Mormon people will just think through these things, because as a person looking from the outside in, I can't help but just shake my head over this. This is just silliness.
Yeah, well, thank you. It seems that the words everlasting and always are floating definitions in the LDS dictionary.
They are. Yeah. They are. Thank you, Kyle. We appreciate
your
call.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have Cheryl from Draper. Hello, Cheryl.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Doris.
Hi, what can we help you with? What's your question tonight?
I have a question for Bill.
Uh-huh.
On the very first time you started speaking with regards to plural marriage, he mentioned the three apostles and the spiritual marriage. Can
mm-hmm.
he talk about that? Because I wasn't aware of that, and I'm kind of confused on it.
Well, certainly. Let's see, let's name them. It's L. Tom Perry, it's Dallin Oaks, and M. Russell Nelson. All were widowers. They lost their first wives in death, and all three ended up remarrying in the temple for time and eternity women who were not sealed to other men. For instance, Dallin Oaks is married to a woman named Kristen, I believe. His former wife, I think her name was June. And Dallin Oaks actually made a comment not too terribly long ago where he mentioned Kristen as being one of his wives in, I wish I was prepared for this, I would have the quote memorized, but basically saying that Kristen was going to be one of his wives, he didn't say one of his wives, but a wife for a partner in eternity or something like that. I don't quote me on that, I'm paraphrasing. I'm working on an article on this right now, and I don't have all the things memorized. But yeah, there are three current apostles in the Mormon Church right now that are practicing what even some Mormons are calling celestial polygamy. So even though they're not, of course, living with more than one wife right now, technically they believe that they are married to more than one wife.
And right they expect now. To live with them.
Absolutely.
On the other
they
side
do
when they get there.
Yeah, polygamy is not a dead issue in Mormonism. Mm-hmm. It certainly isn't.
I agree with you. It's not a dead issue, but I also understand that the men can have multiple wives for all time and eternity, and they can be married to women who have not been sealed to other men. However, women aren't able to be married to more than one man.
Yeah, well, nowadays, it certainly were when Joseph Smith was alive.
Yeah.
I mean, Joseph Smith had at least 10 polyandrous relationships. Now, not all of these women were married to Mormon men, but they certainly were married to other men.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this issue really disturbs a lot of Latter-day Saints. It's odd about this is that most Mormons have no problem talking about Brigham Young's polygamy. In fact, if you go to the Beehive House, that's one of the first things they want to talk about is polygamy. They want to get in and get out of there as quickly as possible. And they will tell you something like the reason that they needed to practice polygamy was because of all these men who died during the persecution period, which the Mormon Church can't even come up with a number of men who actually died during this time. This new book that the three historians came out on the Mountain Meadows Massacre mentions only dozens of being killed. Seems kind of odd that you have to institute a whole doctrine of polygamy for just dozens of deaths, and I'm not mm-hmm. downplaying mm-hmm. those deaths at all. But still, when you ask them at the Beehive House, why did they have to practice polygamy? Well, it was in order to take care of the women. You have to marry them to
yeah.
take care of them?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
You know, that makes no sense whatsoever.
And were only polygamous wives widows? Were they just widows? Were the polygamous wives, right?
Yeah. And plus that we'll say, well, it was for property reasons. I asked this one sister missionary, I says, what do you mean by that? She says, well, it was for legal reasons. I says, well, after 1862, there couldn't have been any legal reasons due to the Morrill Act that was signed by Abraham Lincoln. Polygamy was illegal.
Well, act, you know,
officially
also,
at 1862.
Remember this correctly, that was one of the stipulations for Utah to even become a state.
Yes.
With mm-hmm. the issue.
In fact, Utah is I think, the only state that has actually written in its constitution that you can't practice polygamy. So.
And I think yeah. that was something that was put on by the government, the federal government, in order to,
right.
to do that. If you would research that, I'm not 100% sure, but I thought that's how I understood that.
Well, definitely the polygamy issue was one of the issues that mm-hmm. prevented Utah from becoming a state, and they had to get that cleared up before
right.
the government was going to allow them into the Union. There's no doubt about that. Definitely. It's
okay.
True.
Well, I appreciate you going over that. I knew that that's how it was practiced, but I didn't know exactly the terminology that was used through the apostles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Cheryl, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Aha, uh-huh, good night. Okay, we have a call from Miguel on line one from Salt Lake City. Hello, Miguel.
Miguel.
I should know that by now. Thank you.
That's okay. How you doing, Doris? I met
good.
You a few weeks ago. You're really nice lady.
Yes, I remember
meeting you. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing well. Miguel.
I just wanted to say really quickly, you know,
I'm from Southern
a lot
California.
Of non-Christians believe that, that Christians have common sense. And no one told me this because what I'm about to tell you, but I've always wondered why Joseph Smith had to use a stick to wedge the stone off of where the plates were, but then he could reach down and pick up the plates and then run, I don't know how many miles back into town. That never made sense. And the second thing that didn't make sense is he's a farm boy, but yet he translates the Book of Mormon into Old English. That didn't make any sense either. And no one told me that. That was just something that I could just thought of one day. And I, you know, there's other things that I've looked at too that don't make sense. But, you know, I was raised Mormon. My family's Mormon. And I love the Mormon people. I just wish that they would wise up and see, you know, read between the lines and see what's going on.
Well, it's Miguel, it's certainly a spiritual blindness. There's no doubt about that. I know what you mean when you say wise up, and of course we would all agree that it really has nothing to do with any of man's wisdom whatsoever. We can present the arguments, and I think God wants us to be able to present good arguments, but at the end of the day, it all comes down to the power of the Holy Spirit convicting their hearts and opening their eyes. And certainly he uses good arguments in such a way. But I have to keep reminding myself that he can save Mormons without the arguments as well. And I've seen that happen many times.
And, you know, I've also heard different comments about this Old English, that's the language God speaks. And so naturally that's the language Joseph Smith's going to translate into.
Well, that's certainly how they pray at conference.
Well, I guess they believe that God was mute before Shakespeare, before the English language, because they didn't speak that back then. You know, back in the Bible days, English wasn't even invented yet. So, how did God speak to His people?
Yeah.
That's another example of what doesn't make sense.
Well, think of it too, Miguel. At that particular time, the King James Bible is the Bible that really reigned supreme, and it used a lot of the these and thous and all that. And it was a poetic, biblical language that everybody at that time understood. So to copy that into the Book of Mormon would seem to make a whole lot of sense. In fact, now looking back, what if Joseph Smith wrote the Book of Mormon and didn't put all those verses in like that and put them in a modern English? It would probably, I would think, be a little harder for him to sell among the religious people.
In those times.
And that language tends to resonate with a lot of people who are used to reading the King James Bible. And not that I've got anything against the King James. It's really long. I cut my teeth on the King James.
Yeah.
But
I agree. I mean, I like the new King James myself because it doesn't have the these and the thous in there. I've read some of the old, King James, which is fine. I mean, it's a great addition, but the thing is that a lot of times, and I'm not trying to pick on the Mormons. Like I said, I love the Mormon people, but a lot of times I've heard them pray, or when they say a speech or something, and they use the these and the thous, like that's supposed to make them more spiritual or righteous. And to me, it's like, come on, you know, we're talking, you know, we're Americanizing, you know, we don't speak the old English ourselves. We're in America, and they're using the thous and the these and the prayer, like it's supposed to make you more spiritual.
Well,
and here's another thing, really quickly. If the King James is the most accurate and that's the one we're supposed to use, then what about the Tongans and the Chinese and Spanish and everybody else who can't read English? Where does that leave them?
I think that's a good argument, and that you brought up those other people groups would raise another point that I would make, is that the Chinese and the Tongans, they don't in their own language, in Chinese or whatever, in Tongan, I don't think they pray in King James, in King Jamesese. Can you even do that in Tongan? I don't even know if you can.
I think so.
It's purely an American thing. It's an English thing.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
All right. Well, God bless you guys, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you, Miguel.
All right. God bless.
Uh-huh. Good night. Okay, John from Salt Lake City. Hello, John.
Hi.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, how are you guys?
Doing well, John.
Doing good, thank you.
Okay, good. My question is, well, first, some quick background. Like you were saying, the gentleman, I don't know your name, sorry. I was raised LDS. I went on an LDS mission, but then I've educated myself, and so I know, you know, I've taken classes at the university. I know history of Utah, history of LDS. But my question is, why do you guys say that Mormons aren't Christians? I mean, I'm basically myself now agnostic, atheist mix, but I don't see how you guys say Mormons aren't Christians. I mean, you guys, to me, I mean, it's an older couple, seem pretty intelligent, educated, but how are you saying they're not Christians if they believe in Jesus? And to me, you guys seem like you're pseudo-Christians with, like, this soft discrimination. Where do you get a purpose in attacking them all the time? I mean, what's the purpose?
Well, John, let me explain it this way. If there were certain things that Christians were known to believe pretty much through all their history, and someone all of a sudden came along and denied or distorted all those basic teachings, but yet still wanted to be called by the same name, would that not be confusing to you? John?
Yeah, but a lot of stuff is confusing. I mean, you brought up science.
All right. Okay, here's the thing. There were certain things that Christians have believed historically.
And, I mean, everything in the Bible can be pretty much disproven scientifically almost. It's an old record, old archaic texts that are basically borrowed from other cultures.
John, you got to get away from Richard Dawkins and these guys. You got to read some good stuff on the subject. And believe me, there's a lot of good responses to these guys.
Yeah.
I'm sad that you went that you went and you weren't able to read some good sources on some of the questions that I'm sure that you had. But when it comes to Christianity and what makes someone Christian, most of the time it comes down with most people as being nothing more than moralism. And what I mean by that is the Mormons try to live good lives, and nobody is doubting that. Mormons try very hard to live very upstanding lives, and I credit them for that. I think that's noble, and I think it's to their credit that they're like that. But being just a good quote-unquote person does not necessarily mean that you are Christian. It's just like no Mormon would embrace me as a Mormon because I don't believe the things that Mormons believe. So if I came up to a Mormon and insisted that he call me a Mormon, don't you think he would probably be a little unnerved by that?
Yeah, it depends on the person. He probably could, but
okay.
Most religions basically, you know, believe the same core principles.
No, they don't.
They don't understand how people can sit there and attack each other. Why don't they
John,
positive things? Why are you dedicating your whole life to bashing a certain sect where, like you said, most Mormons are trying to, well, I'm not even that positive, but I'm not saying they're all trying to live good lives, but at least their teachings, most of their teachings say they're trying to, you know, do the right thing. Why would you want to dedicate your life to bash people like that? I mean, dedicate your life to teach about Jesus and the positive things about Jesus and not go after a certain, whatever you want to call them, a sect, a cult, or whatever. I mean, so to me, like I said, that seems like that pseudo Christianism. I mean, why?
Well, I think John,
why don't you let him answer your question?
See, John, I think what you need to first understand is a correct definition of Christianity, and I think that'll solve a lot of the problems here. Because again, you're going back to exactly what I said. You're trying to look at their good lives, and they're trying to live as good citizens as somehow a claim to their Christianity. And I'm trying to tell you that that does not necessarily make a person a Christian. Now, the Mormons know this because when Joseph Smith came on the scene, one of the first things he did was to basically claim that our Christianity was faulty, and Brigham Young himself actually said that we weren't Christians in the New Testament sense of the word. So they understand this. It's that they understand also in a politically correct climate that they have to tone it down a little bit. And we're just saying, look, it depends on what is true. People ask me this all the time. Why do you do what you do? Because I have this love for truth. And if these issues are not true, if the teachings that the Mormons are getting from their leadership is not true, then they need to know that. It would be wrong for me to just turn a blind eye. Now, you, not being a Christian, you don't care, and I understand that. But the fact is, we are Christians, and we're very much concerned about Christian truth, and that's why we want to share Christian truth with our Mormon friends, and we want them to see that what they've been sold and what they've bought into does not represent true Christianity as they've been told. That's merely the issue.
We need to go on and take another call too, John. So we do appreciate your call, and I think that Bill's answered your question.
Thank you. You guys have a good evening, man.
Hey, John.
Thank you.
Have a good evening, too.
Mm-hmm. Good night. Okay, Lori on line one. Hello, Lori.
Hi. I have a question that's a little bit complicated. Lori looked into Mormonism and the Book of Mormon and the history of the church and stuff, and now understanding the Bible the way I do, when it talks about Antichrist, the original Greek meaning of the word anti, just instead of, not the way it's evolved in English, antiperspirant, antifreeze. So do you think that taking on another Jesus, basically, I'll just cut to it, would be like bearing the mark? Not to judge anybody or not to say that that couldn't change, but for all your viewers out there, you know, I have a mother-in-law who we've tried to discuss truth with her and stuff, and she doesn't seem to care much. She just thinks that, well, you know, it's still a good church and that they still are going to have good teachings and, you know, everybody else is doing it. But just to get the wheels turning in some heads, or what do you think? Well, if you knew that you bore the mark, or do you think that taking on another Jesus is the same as bearing the mark? Now, mind you, I don't think that there's a physical Antichrist present here on the earth, but it's like he lives in their hearts through the pages of a book. Do you know what I'm saying?
We've only got a couple of minutes, Lori, so we'll have to answer this very quickly.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're going to give me that one in 2 minutes?
Yeah, no, less than 2 minutes.
Less than 2 minutes.
About a minute.
I wouldn't say that a person who is at this present time believing in another Jesus has taken any type of a mark. But certainly, I think that a lot of people who do believe in a false Jesus can still have their eyes opened up by the Holy Spirit. I don't think it's something that is necessarily permanent and something that we should just, you know, set aside. So, anyway, I guess in an eschatological way, I think you're looking at it as the mark of the beast is probably what you're looking at, and I don't see that even being possible right now. So
I don't either. And in fact, my closing remarks, and that's where we're at right now. We didn't finish our list, but we'll have to deal with that another time.
We never finish our list. Have you ever noticed that?
We sure don't. But I just wanted to, in my closing remarks, mention the fact that at the end of the day, as we close up talking about the sameness of the doctrines between the Mormon fundamentalists and the Mormon Church, Jesus warned us to beware of false Christs. And in fact, because he knew they would come, and Gordon B. Hinckley himself said that the Mormons believe in a different Jesus. He said that they believe in not the traditional Jesus that Christians and that we believe in. Now that right there makes them not Christians. They believe that Lucifer and Jesus are spiritual brothers. That is not the biblical Jesus. He's our creator. He created all things, including Lucifer, and he's the one. Our Jesus is the one who died on the cross for our sins. He did not bleed in the garden for our sins. He died on the cross. And we urge you to go to him and ask for the forgiveness that he offers absolutely free. We want to thank you for joining us tonight, and we hope to see you again next week on Polygamy, What Love Is This? We'll see you then. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again. Mm-hmm.